This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the Gospel of Luke. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 19.
I remembered those words through the funeral in the days that followed. I'm still thinking about his words, and they've changed my life. I'm not saving anything. We use our good china for special events like losing a pound or getting the sink unstopped or the first camellia blossom. Someday, and one of these days are fading from my vocabulary, it's if it's worth seeing or hearing or doing, I want to see and hear and do it now. Every morning when I open my eyes, I tell myself, that is special. You see, here's the lesson. Hoard God's blessings and he'll take them from you. But use them for the good of others and for his glory. And he'll multiply those blessings. Jesus says, but bring here, or the nobleman in the parable says, but bring here those enemies of mine who did not want me to reign over them and slay them before me. And of course, this will be what happens when Jesus returns at the end of the age. Gentle Jesus, meek and mild, is going to return to this earth to crush his enemies like powder and rule them with a rod of iron. Jesus is going to come back. He's going to slay his enemies. Jesus is going to take charge. The least that we can do is to present him a return on the investment he's made in us. Well, when he had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. And it came to pass when he came near to Bethphage and Bethany at the mountain called Olivet. Bethany now is on the east side of the Mount of Olives. It's just below the crest of the hill. As you top the hill, the Mount of Olives, you come down into Jerusalem. Bethany's on the other side. There he sent two of his disciples, saying, go into the village opposite you, where as you enter, you will find a colt tied, on which no one has ever sat. Loose him and bring him here. And if anyone asks you, why are you loosing it? Thus you shall say to him, because the Lord has need of it. So those who were sent went their way and found it just as he had said to them. But as they were loosing the colt, the owners of it said to them, why are you loosing the colt? And of course they said, the Lord has need of him. Oh, that we were like the owners of that colt and yielded whenever the master had need of us. Well, then they brought him to Jesus and they threw their own clothes on the colt and they set Jesus on him. In other words, they made this impromptu saddle. And notice the miracle here. Usually a young colt that had never been ridden is saddled up and stationary under the weight of its first passenger. That would never happen. Usually a young colt, a young donkey, would need to be broken and would need to be tamed first. But this donkey instinctively knows that he needs to submit to the master. He knows this is no ordinary rider on its back. Jesus is once again demonstrating his mastery over nature. Even the donkey remains submissive and remains at peace under his weight. Verse 36, and as they went, many spread their clothes on the road. You know, the other gospel said that they also lined the street with palm fronds. It was the Jewish equivalent of rolling out the red carpet. Jesus is getting the royal treatment. And then as he was now drawing near the descent of the Mount of Olives. In other words, he's topping the hill now, and he's reaching that point on the top of the Mount of Olives where you look out and you can see this panoramic view of Jerusalem. It's right before your eyes. Jesus is right there at the top of the mountain. And the whole multitude of the disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works that they had seen, saying, blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. The crowd begins to chant Psalm 118. It was a song written about the Messiah 1,000 years before his arrival on this day. This was the only public demonstration that Jesus ever orchestrated. And he did it for a reason. He did it to fulfill prophecy. The date of this occurrence was April the 6th, 32 AD. And if you study Daniel chapter 9, you'll discover that this was a date that had been predicted by Daniel. The exact day Messiah presented himself to the nation Israel had been predicted by the prophet 500 years in advance. Here was Daniel's prophecy. He taught that 69 periods of 7 years, or 483 years, would elapse from the decree to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem until the presentation of the Messiah to the nation. Well, that decree came by the Persian Emperor Artaxerxes on March the 14th, 445 BC. Now, Daniel was using the Babylonian calendar that consisted of 360-day years. Thus, when you do the calculations and mark off on the calendar 173,880 days, you come to the date April the 6th, 32 AD, which was the exact day we find here in Luke 19 when Jesus rode the donkey down the Mount of Olives into the city of Jerusalem. Daniel had predicted the day 500 years in advance. The Jewish leaders should have known about Daniel's prophecy, his prediction, and its date. To make sure his people didn't miss the crucial day, God had even added prophecies. In Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9, there the prophet says, "Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey." All this was predicted ahead of time. You see, this was the day that the pieces of the puzzle should have fallen together for the Jewish leaders. God was affirming Jesus as his son. This was the day the Jews should have connected the dots. Instead, though, they just further hardened their hearts toward Jesus. Verse 39, "And some of the Pharisees called to him from the crowd, 'Teacher, rebuke your disciples.'" You see, the crowd, they were referring to Jesus as the Messiah. They were hailing him as their king. Jesus was basking in their praise. The Jews wanted him to rebuke them. They didn't believe that Jesus was the Messiah. But he answered and said to them, "I tell you that if these should keep silent, the stones would immediately cry out." Now, I got to tell you, I really wish the disciples had shut up for a minute or two, because it would have been cool to really hear those stones start praising Jesus. Here you would have had the original Rolling Stones rocking out for Jesus. I mean, this would have been some true rock music right here. I have some rocks from the Mount of Olives in my office, and I keep them there. And I'm just waiting to hear them burst out in praise at somebody. The only problem is I always beat them to the punch. That's why they stay silent. I'm too busy praising the Lord myself. Now, as he drew near, he saw the city and wept over it, saying, "If you had known, even you, especially in this your day," this was the predicted day, "the things that make for your peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes." Imagine, this was their day, predicted 5 centuries in advance. God confirming his word through future prediction. Amazing. But when the day finally arrives, the most important day in the history of the Jews, their eyes were closed. They didn't see. And it caused Jesus to weep. He mourns over their stubborn hearts. Instead of relishing this glorious day, Jesus speaks of another ominous day. Verse 43, "For days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment around you, surround you and close you in on every side and level you and your children within you to the ground. And they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not know the time of your visitation." Now Jesus makes a prediction of his own. He looks ahead 4 decades to the year 70 AD. The Roman army led by the general Titus Vespasian will invade Israel, and he'll lay siege to the capital of Jerusalem. The attack will last 143 days. In the end, the temple gets burned to the ground. The once glorious city is reduced to rubble. An unbelievable 600,000 Jews were killed in the battle. Many thousands more were forced into slavery. Many of them killed for sport in the Roman amphitheaters. It was another Holocaust for the Jews. And on the Temple Mount, not one stone was left upon another, just as Jesus said. In fact, if you go with us to Jerusalem today, you can visit the archaeological dig just south of the Temple Mount. It's known as the Southern Excavations. There today, in the ravine, just below the Temple Mount, sits a pile of huge stones that once made up the temple structures. The stones were thrown over the side of the mountain. They were toppled over by the Roman soldiers. The prophecy of Jesus was literally fulfilled. Not one stone was left upon another. The whole temple platform was leveled to the ground. As the story goes, the outside of the temple was overlaid with gold. So when the temple burned, the gold melted and it rolled into the cracks between the stones. Thus, the greedy Roman soldiers, they disassembled the stones in order to loot the gold and take the gold out of the crevices and take it for themselves. That's why no stone was left upon another. They all were leveled to the ground. Verse 45, then Jesus went into the temple and he began to drive out those who bought and sold in it. Boy, when Jesus saw these priests making a buck off God, it angered him. I mean, to pay the temple tax, the worshipers were required to swap their Roman coins for special temple shekels, but they had to do it at a hefty exchange rate. Or, in order to make a sacrifice, they had to purchase a certified lamb from the priestly herd, again, at an exorbitant cost. It was all a scam. Jesus comes in, he sees this, and he cleanses the temple. This was the second time, by the way, Jesus cleansed the temple. He did it twice. The first time, he weaved a whip, and he used that whip to drive out the money changers. This time, he got so mad, he took them on with his bare hands. Jesus said to them, verse 46, it is written, my house is a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. He quotes Isaiah 56, verse 7. Isn't it interesting? A den is a place to relax. I think it's an indictment against the church when we become a place that tolerates people with the wrong motives. People trying to make a buck off God. They shouldn't be at ease among us. I think if we were a house of prayer, we might just weed out some of the crooks and drive off some of those who had the wrong motives. And he was teaching daily in the temple, but the chief priests, the scribes, and the leaders of the people sought to destroy him and were unable to do anything, for all the people were very attentive to hear him. In 1966, the mamas and the papas, they had a hit song. This is before most of your time, but I remember it. They had a hit song called Monday, Monday. And the lyrics went like this. Monday, Monday, can't trust that day. On Monday morning, you gave me no warning of what it would be. That Monday evening, you would leave and not take me. Monday couldn't guarantee that Monday evening, you would still be here with me. The author of the lyrics was dumped by his girlfriend on Monday. Apparently, they'd had a wonderful weekend, but she left him on Monday. Well, in a sense, this is what happened to Jesus. On Sunday, Jesus rode his donkey into Jerusalem to the cheers of the crowd. But by Monday morning, Jesus had confronted a whole different attitude. The Jewish establishment, they didn't appreciate him upsetting their temple trade. Jesus had threatened their prophets and their power. In fact, they grew so mad at him that they plotted to kill him. As in the song, a wonderful weekend and a glorious Sunday turned into a sad, treacherous Monday. Chapter 20 begins. Now it happened on one of those days as he taught the people in the temple and preached the gospel that the chief priests and the scribes together with the elders confronted him. Now I like showdowns. High noon is my favorite time of the day. High noon at the OK Corral. Here, three bad guys walk into the temple to take on Jesus, the chief priests, the scribes, the elders. What follows is a guns blazing confrontation where Jesus mows them down. In verse 2, the Jews speak to Jesus, saying, "Tell us, by what authority are you doing these things, or who is he who gave you this authority?" You see, Jesus had challenged the Jews' authority. He had said to them, "What right do you have to turn my father's house into a den of thieves?" Now they're picking up the gauntlet. "Who are you to tell us what we should and shouldn't do? Where did you get your authority?" It becomes a battle of clout. Of course, their question, like all questions that day, was a trap. Understand, authority was a touchy subject under Roman rule. If Jesus claimed divine authority, he could be painted as a potential enemy of Rome. If he said he lacked authority from God, then he'd lose credibility with the masses. Either way, Jesus answered. The Jews thought they had him trapped. But he answered and said to them, "I also will ask you one thing and answer me." Jesus answers their question with a question of his own. "The baptism of John, was it from heaven or from men?" The Jewish authorities tried to put Jesus on the spot. Here, Jesus returns the favor. Notice verse 5. "And they reasoned among themselves, saying, 'If we say from heaven, he will say, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, all the people will stone us, for they are persuaded that John was a prophet.'" The master had outmaneuvered his enemies. And so they answered that they did not know where it was from. They had to play dumb in the end. In fact, by the end of the day, playing dumb wasn't difficult for them. Try to match wits with the master, and you end up the dimwit. It's amazing. Throughout this day, on Monday, the most brilliant minds in Judaism tried to spar with Jesus. They tried to argue Scripture with its author. And when you do that, you're destined to lose. You don't want to argue theology with the theos. When you take on the original Bible answer man, you end up proving how dumb you are. Well, Jesus said to them, "Neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things." He's saying, if you're not going to go out on a limb to answer me, then why should I go out on a limb to answer you? Round one goes to Jesus. Well, then Jesus began to tell the people this parable. "A certain man planted a vineyard, leased it to vine dressers, and went into a far country for a long time." Now, this was a common business arrangement in Israel. A landowner would transform a tract of land into a vineyard, and then he would lease it to a vine dresser, expecting a percentage of the profits come harvest time. Well, at vintage time, he sent a servant to the vine dressers that they might give him some of the fruit of the vineyard. But the vine dressers beat him and sent him away empty-handed. Again, he sent another servant, and they beat him also, treated him shamefully, and sent him away empty-handed. And again, he sent a third, and they wounded him also and cast him out. This was horrible. The tenants had forgotten who are the tenants. I mean, they must have been drunk on the wine they'd produced by the way they treated the owner's servants. Well, then the owner of the vineyard said, "What shall I do?" I mean, he doesn't want to whine. He wants to take some appropriate action. And so he reasons, "I will send my beloved son. Probably they will respect him when they see him." I mean, surely a visit from the owner's son will command their respect. "But when the vine dressers saw him, they reasoned among themselves, saying, 'This is the heir. Come, let us kill him, that the inheritance may be ours.'" Under Jewish law, any man could claim ownerless property. They thought by killing the son, they could take ownership of the vineyard. And so they cast him out of the vineyard and killed him. "Therefore, what will the owner of the vineyard do to them? He will come and destroy those vine dressers and give the vineyard to others." And when they heard it, they said, "Certainly not." Suddenly it dawned on the Jews, Jesus' parable wasn't just a parable, it was also a prophecy. In fact, it was a prophecy that would be fulfilled within the week. Israel was the vineyard. Just a few feet from where this confrontation took place, carved grapevines adorned the huge doors of the temple. Israel was the vineyard. The Jewish leaders were the tenants. The owner's servants were the prophets who had been sent but rejected. The owner's son was Jesus. And after beating the prophets and trying to steal the kingdom from the Father, they now try to eliminate God's son. Isn't it interesting here? A courageous Jesus is confronting the very men who at this moment are plotting his murder. They know exactly what he's talking about when he speaks to them. Notice verse 16, the owner promises to destroy those vine dressers and give the vineyard to others. You know, this was fulfilled historically when the Jewish establishment rejected the gospel that was preached to them by Peter in the early church. God sent the Romans to sack Jerusalem. We mentioned it. The year was 70 AD. And when the Romans sacked Jerusalem, they dismantled all the institutions of Judaism, from priesthood to the temple. God's work in the world shifted from the Jews to the church. And by the second century AD, the fellowship of the church was almost exclusively Gentiles. God took the kingdom from the Jews and gave it to another. Verse 17, then Jesus looked at them. The Greek word literally means he saw through them. He saw through them. He looked right through them. They responded to the parable by being aghast. Oh, certainly not. They'd never kill the owner's son. And yet that was exactly the treachery they were plotting in their hearts as they feigned their disapproval and mouthed their hollow words at the parable. He saw through them. And Jesus said, what then is this that is written? The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. Here he quotes Psalm 118, verse 22. Again, it's a messianic passage that was attached to an ancient story. You see, construction of the temple was an incredible feat of engineering. Huge stones, some 20 feet thick by 40 feet long, were quarried north of Jerusalem. Then they were assembled on site there at the temple. They were so precisely sculpted that no mortar was used. But one of the stones, when it arrived, it seemed out of place. It didn't seem to fit. So the builders, they rolled it off the Temple Mount down into the Kidron Valley. Only when the temple was near completion was it discovered that the stone they had rejected was actually the capstone or the cornerstone. You see, this was the mistake that the Jews had made or were about to make with Jesus. They were plotting to destroy the cornerstone. Why? Because Jesus didn't fit. At the time, Judaism was about legalism and ritualism and self-righteousness and prejudice. Jesus was about freedom and love and acceptance and relationship. The Jews rejected Jesus, but now he has become the cornerstone, the linchpin of the church and of those of us who trust him. Well, verse 18 is an ominous warning. Whoever falls on that stone will be broken. But on whomever it falls, it will grind him to powder. If you come broken and humble to Jesus, if you surrender your will to him, if you fall on him, he'll lift you up. He'll give you power. But harden your heart, and he'll fall on you. He'll grind you to powder. The question comes, power or powder? And it all relates to how you respond to Jesus. And the chief priests and the scribes that very hour sought to lay hands on him, and they feared the people, for they knew that he had spoken this parable against them. If the shoe fits, wear it. And they did. They were seething in anger. They knew that he was calling them on the carpet. But it gets worse. This showdown isn't over. The beatdown Jesus gives them continues in the rest of the chapter, and we'll get to that next time.
Listening to Bible teaching here on the radio is a huge blessing that many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world simply don't have. We rejoice in this opportunity to share Pastor Sandy's messages with you. We do want to be sure to remind you that radio is not a church. Radio should be a complement to what God is already doing in your personal discipleship through the local body of believers that you're a part of. Maybe you're listening today and you don't have a home church. You've visited various places, but nothing seems to fit. First, if you live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, we want to personally invite you to join us for worship at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We meet every Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. For more information, including driving directions, please log on to sandyadams.org and follow the link to the church website. Now, if you're listening outside of the Atlanta, Georgia area and are looking for a home church, we encourage you to log on to calvarychapel.com and find a Calvary Chapel in your area that teaches through the Bible, just like Pastor Sandy does each day here on this program. Well, we wish we had more time today, but we've come to the close of today's broadcast. Be sure to remember to join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through God's Word. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.